This is John Denman introducing another in the series of transcribed programs of the highlights of testimony given before the House Un-American Activities Committee in Detroit. Today brought the climax of the hearings, the appearance of Mrs. Berenice Baldwin. She was revealed only week before last as an FBI undercover agent in the Communist Party for the past 9 years. She told today of volunteering in late 1942 to aid the FBI in any way she could. In early 1943, she agreed at the FBI's request to make a monumental personal sacrifice and render an important service to her country. She joined the Communist Party and worked her way up to a position of trust, where she finally ended up with access to the party's membership list for the entire state in 1947 and 48, except for certain important segments that she discusses later. Mrs. Baldwin, reading from neatly typed notes, outlined again the Detroit area organization of the party, adding details to the framework sketched Monday by another FBI undercover agent, Richard O'Hare. Then she turned to outstate communist cells, locating them in many spots throughout the state.
We have an outstate section. This includes all of Michigan.
Will you proceed then?
It pinpoints the communist concentration within these towns. Willow Run, Kaiser Fraser. That meant that within Willow Run was the Kaiser Fraser plant and the communists within it. Pontiac. Flint. Grand Rapids. Jackson. Monroe. Kalamazoo. And Ann Arbor. Now, Ann Arbor was very significant inasmuch as it contained our Michigan State College people. And within that were three clubs.
You mean within the university or within the college?
Well, they were mostly college students. They were within Ann Arbor. There may have been a few who did not go to college there. The majority of them did.
Mrs. Baldwin named the three clubs in Ann Arbor as the A.A. Town Club, perhaps standing for Ann Arbor Town Club, and the Ralph Nefus and Haldane Communist Club. She went on to spot communist clubs in Traverse City, St. Joseph, and Benton Harbor, Muskegon, South Haven, New Haven, Gladwin, and Ypsilanti. Then she touched on communism and education again. Of course, Mrs. Baldwin's location of Michigan State College at Ann Arbor was a slip of the tongue. She meant University of Michigan. But she didn't forget Michigan State College either.
Lansing. Now, here is another important part, too. With the exception of one person, that club was never known. And I had information directly from Mildred Pearlstein herself that this contained teachers.
Now, will you give us the name of that cell again?
Lansing, Michigan.
Lansing?
Does that contain teachers on the public school system or in the college?
College. In fact, I was told that there were two professors within this group. Now, this is hearsay. I mean, it was told to me.
In the Upper Peninsula, Mrs. Baldwin located 14 communist cells. She said they were in Rock, Marquette, Eben Junction, Calumet, Escanaba, Moss, Ontonagon, Hancock, Iron River, Iron Mountain, Bruce's Crossing, and Barraga. She said there were two communist clubs in Ironwood, a community club and an industrial club. By November of 1947, the Reds were beginning to feel the pressure of gradually growing public opinion and anti-communist legislation. That's when the party began boring underground. Mrs. Baldwin describes the process of taking a conspirative organization underground.
Well, beginning in the spring of 1948, or even prior to that time, in November of 1947, when we usually began our registration for the year to follow, or in other words, our 1948 membership, certain security measures were authorized by District 7. There were to be no records kept. No phone calls made. And if there was a phone call made, no names were to be mentioned on that. All lists, membership lists, any communist information about an individual member or a club as a whole was to be destroyed. We even went thoroughly into the fact of putting into our sections office supplies.
Put what into the sections?
Office supplies and mimeograph machines to be used at any time when we could not operate in the open. Now, that would be used for leaflets and agitation within the shops, perhaps on a given issue. From then on, it was announced by Dr. Jackson in May of 48 that each section, and particularly the Lower East Side section, which I belonged to at that time, was to be broken down into groups of 50, and each group would function as one club or as one cell. From that point, we went into no registration for 49. There was no membership card issued in 49, 50, or 51 for security reasons. In October 1950, I was called to my section organizer's home, a special meeting, which she told me that the party was going underground and was establishing an underground apparatus. That apparatus would contain a reserve membership, and that I was to be one of those reserves. That I should follow the party decision of not contacting Communist Party members or to have anything to do with Communist Party members. I could not attend meetings, or even to be seen or to contact anyone that would be labeled a communist. And I even asked him at that point if I could attend the Civil Rights Congress. And he said, absolutely not, because I was a member of that organization at that time. And he said the decision handed down should be abided by. And that is what happened from then on.
Mrs. Baldwin's reply to a question from Representative Jackson led to a vitally interesting series of questions and answers.
To what extent does a communist fear exposure? If at all.
Well, I'm glad you added that. They don't feel exposure as long as they were open and working in the open. But they would feel or fear exposure underground.
If they had been up to that time concealed.
That is correct.
Is the utility of an exposed communist affected in any way, his utility to the party by exposure? His usefulness to the party?
That is no longer a use.
He is no longer a use once exposed.
That is correct.
So by that statement, Mrs. Baldwin, if, we'll say in Detroit, there are many persons who have never been identified as members of the party. But once the identity has been made, the Communist Party has lost a useful worker for them. Is that true?
That is absolutely true.
So by exposing people that haven't been exposed, the Communist Party suffers a setback.
That is too true.
Now, you referred to the fact that there were professional cells, the members of which have always been kept a matter of secret. Well, what is the importance in the new activity of the Communist Party of the professional cells, as with as regard to their importance before this movement of this underground movement began. Do they have any a different part to play now than before? Or is there is their place of greater importance now? Or how does it figure into the plan of the Communist Party?
Well, just simple logic will tell you that now those unidentified and unknown members, even to the Communist Party membership, are almighty important. They have never been known. They have never been exposed.
And when you say never been known, you mean, do you mean never have been known to other members of the Communist Party?
Yes, they've never been known to other members of the Communist Party, with the exception, perhaps, of our leadership, Helen Nelson, Carwinter.
Mrs. Baldwin said that because of the extreme secrecy about the membership of professional cells, she knew little about them. But she assumed, from her knowledge of the party, that here in Michigan there are professional cells composed of doctors, lawyers, newspaper men, civil service employees, and the like, all poised, as she put it, to be ready should the signal come to pull the trigger. Her account aroused Congressman Potter's curiosity about one matter.
It seemed to me, Mrs. Baldwin, the fact that the Communist Party shows a, despite their claim of democracy, they go out of their way to protect a certain class, a certain group of people. They are very conscious of the security of the professional units, while they're not so careful about the security of the members who might be organized in the field of labor or in other segments of our society. I'm just wondering if that, how consistent that is with their claims of being a so-called democratic group.
Well, for professional people are more or less, you could call them the intelligence class. They have a given category. The little rank and filer, don't forget, is the guy who goes out and carries out these policies. He's the one that runs the streets with the leaflets. He's the one that participates in picket lines. He's the one that actually carries the policy through.
Well, is that a classless society?
Supposed to be.
Sounds like it to me.
If, and heaven forbid, but come the revolution, they wouldn't be the guy that's on the picket line that would be the man that would assume the power and the authority. But it would be the man, the so-called intellectual group or your professional group would be the kingpins in such a society. Isn't that true?
That is true.
These have been transcribed highlights of the testimony given by Mrs. Bernice Baldwin to the House Un-American Activities Committee in Detroit today. Mrs. Baldwin, for 9 years an FBI undercover agent in the Communist Party, is the star of the current hearing. And her testimony, which authorities call the most accurate, timely, and comprehensive picture of communism in Michigan, will be broadcast in more detail over WJR at 11:30 tonight. This is John Denman speaking.